You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Clementine Keith Roach. Clementine, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you so much for speaking with me. It's really nice to reflect on this.
I'm looking forward to reflecting on the show. Of course, this is a show that ended in the late December 2024 at PPOW. The show is called New Statue, and I'm excited to talk about this particular show because I found it beautiful and very moving when I saw it. So to begin with, let's talk a little bit about the title, New Statue, because this also has a relationship to a Sylvia Plath poem, is that correct?
Yeah. The title comes from the Sylvia Plath poem called Morning Song, which was written in 1961 and reflects on the birth of her childhood and the complexities of new motherhood. And I've always just been really drawn to that poem because it seems to capture the strangeness of childbirth so perfectly. It's like, you know, rather than this kind of warm, loving unity of mother and child, she kind of gives this very profound sense of alienation. And she sort of uses very powerful imagery to express how she encounters the baby as something kind of new and unknown and separate to her. And there's this very beautiful line, which I can read, just a short line, which is, our voices echo, magnifying your arrival, new statue, in a drafty museum, your nakedness shadows our safety, we stand round blankly as walls. And yeah, in this line, you know, she compares a hospital to a museum, but also she compares her baby to a statue, something which is, you know, cold and hard and static rather than soft and alive and warm. And there's this kind of distance that she creates between herself and the child, which I found really interesting. Because in some ways you might think it was negative, but actually kind of see like, well, when you think of a statue, you often think of it on a pedestal, you know, maybe of a deity or something to be kind of looked up at, to be revered and contemplated. And something that maybe represents like a beyond, another world. And I sort of see her comparison of the baby to the statue as this way of kind of revering, you know, the strangeness of having created something new, which represents a totally new world and something that is, you know, which is also separate to her, and she doesn't know how it's, you know, how it's going to sort of play out or something. Yeah, so I see it. I felt really fascinated by it because it also combines these interests of birth and statues. I found it very powerful because of the sculptures that I make. You know, there's a real blur of boundaries between the animate and the inanimate. Like, they appear kind of fleshy, the sculptures that I make, but also they're actually kind of hard terracotta. So it really kind of spoke to me in that way.
So this is also about, in some ways, the relationship of a mother to a child. Would you say that extends to these works? And is that a personal relationship that also meant something to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's because basically my work sort of really like came into being through the experience of pregnancy and childbirth. And it's kind of this experience. Yeah, I suppose the poem kind of speaks to me because I had this experience of splitting in two. I mean, in a way that, I kind of experienced my body as something other and something that was operating beyond my control and literally kind of becoming something other. And with this, it sounds horrendous and sort of awful, but it's like I found it actually really revelatory and this, yeah, as a sort of breakdown of identity, kind of bodily and psychically. And because of that, I really felt the parallel of that process in art making, you know, that art making is something that kind of comes from within, and you're kind of ruminating and it's coming out of you, and then you've made it, and it sometimes can feel very different and alien and something to be kind of looked at from a distance, and doesn't necessarily feel part of you. That was like a big part of what began the work that I've been making for the past, you know, almost 10 years. And I think actually, like, you know, following on from that those thoughts about art making, you know, in an even more literal way, actually the process of plaster casting, which I use in my practice, it's really at the heart of my practice, is was something that felt, yeah, I make these plaster casts of my body, and I felt that to be, you know, very literally a kind of expression of that feeling. It's like you know, I took a plaster cast of my hand, it feels like something I know very well, something familiar, and yet the minute it's cast, it becomes something different and new, and it's quite uncanny, actually. It's like, yeah, it becomes, it's never the thing that you saw before, it's always something other. It's not so dissimilar in a way to bringing another person into a world, but I see the sort of similarities in that.
It sounds like when you talk about casting your hand, and that hand being, of course, of yourself, that it begins to look like something else, to feel like something else. So it's almost like the process of giving birth. The hand itself is becoming alien almost to who you are, yet it is you. Similar to the child, did I get that right?
Definitely. Yeah, I think that's the thing. It's like seeing, you know, it's seeing something that has been you, that is you, but then seeing it external to yourself, there's a kind of alienating quality to it. And I think, but that's interesting, you know, it's like it's somehow like you're able to see yourself from the outside, or see something, you know, and also I guess just see that, you know, that these I think it just like it makes you think about what your who you think you are, in this kind of sense of wholeness and kind of knowing yourself. And I think I found there's something really beautiful and strange and maybe kind of liberating about the fact that you also don't know yourself, or there's part, you know, yourself is also kind of alien to yourself, if that makes sense.
It does make sense, yeah.
With plaster casting, it is just such an amazing process, because it is this, you know, this process of kind of duplicating yourself, and yet you never would see yourself in that kind of form. Like, you look at yourself in a detail that you never would usually, and in a way, you know, even just by looking at yourself in that way, it's sort of not you, you know. Well, yeah, I guess it makes you, it poses questions about who we think we are, or what we are, you know, and how we know ourselves.
Absolutely. And that sounds like it relates also to the work, to begin talking about some of the works in the show. I Is Another. That title now has a different meaning for me after what you were just saying. Can you tell me a little bit about that work?
Yeah. Well, that work is, it's the title is actually a quote from the poet Arthur Rimbaud. And I think it's a kind of, he's expressing a kind of detachment from the self, but I kind of just really love, I've always kind of had that written down in my notebook, because I love the way that it sounds, you know, the I is another, that it is this kind of, awkwardness in the phrasing. And I also, I mean, the way that I kind of interpret it, which I'm not so sure how close it is to how he how he meant it, was that the kind of that we, I guess I see it like, you know, we're kind of born into the world, and from the minute we're in the world, we're kind of caught up with others, and we are, you know, we're taking in language, we're taking in gestures, we are mimicking the world around us, and there's something very beautiful about the fact that we are kind of formed by other people, you know, that, again, this idea of a kind of, you know, an individual, an identity that is, you know, something different and specific and on its own is actually like disrupted by that idea that we're actually kind of, we are in some ways assemblages of other people, if that makes sense. And that's something that I've always thought about, you know, when I make my sculptures, you know, that actually, like with the work I as another, it's two bodies coming together, kind of colliding, or you could see it sort of pulling apart two legs. And they are, there's a vessel in the center of the work, which they seem to be either kind of lifting up or pulling apart. And there's, you know, a sense of, yeah, maybe a sense of both kind of fracturing and kind of merging at the same time. And also you don't, you know, the vessel, it could be that it is part of that body, that it is a kind of new body being formed with four legs, or it could be that the bodies are somehow kind of lifting up this vessel. And yeah, I liked the idea that, you know, well, with all my sculptures, there are often many different body parts or assemblages of body parts that come together. They're never of kind of individual singular bodies. They're usually lots of different fragmented bodies. And yeah, with that work, it felt, the title felt quite fitting to these kind of, yeah, these two figures that, with this vessel in the middle, that maybe are one or are two or are actually three. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, I can also, yeah, sorry.
No, go on, yeah. No, you go on, yeah. You could also, you're saying.
No, I mean, I think what I was going to say, like, maybe it's quite important to also talk about my process, because actually I always feel like, because my works are illusionistic, they're quite confusing to look at, and actually it's kind of quite important to sort of describe what they are before you sort of understand the ideas that go into them, because they, yeah, they I don't know, they appear as something different to what they actually are. I don't know maybe you know, but the materials, when you
no,
see
please
them,
tell me. Please tell me. I know something of it, but yeah, I'd love to hear more about the process. Because there's a number of things happening here. I mean, I know these are terracotta, but there's also other elements that are involved here. So I'd love to hear, yeah, the process of building these.
Yeah, well, just that. I mean, I feel like a lot of people who look at the sculptures think that they are totally ceramic, that they're fired terracotta in their totality, and that they're made of clay. But I know, like, you know, that's what they are, that's what they're posing to be. So I'm pleased that people think that in a way. But actually, it's really important to me to stress that they are these kind of assemblages which contain terracotta vessels at their center, which are, they are pre-existing objects. They're antique terracotta vessels that I find in markets and on eBay, and, you know, I'm really like searching around for them a lot, and I'm kind of drawn to these vessels because of their particular form, but also their patina. And, you know, they're often these very kind of aged terracotta urns, which, you know, I actually don't really know the provenance of. They're not particularly special. They're kind of, you know, objects of use that have clearly had a life before and then have been and then have been, you know, taken out of, maybe taken out of use, and then maybe turned into something decorative, and maybe then left outside for a few years. You know, they've had these kind of past lives, which is what I find interesting about them. So I take the vessel, and then I take casts of my body, but I use plaster, and I take casts of my body, or take casts of my family or friends, or basically anyone who's willing and has comes to the studio. I'm not particularly, I like to not be specific about who I cast, because I kind of feel like I don't want these casts to be portraits. I sort of like the idea that the casts are taken just of people who are close to me, like often in proximity, and who are willing. So yeah, I work with an assistant when I'm doing the casting. So often we just cast each other, or friends. But I take the casts of I take casts of me or my friends, and then I merge them onto the vessels. So I've thought of the composition before, and often the casts come out are cast with the vessel in mind. But then I kind of sculpt them onto the vessels and create armatures inside them. And, you know, there's a lot of breaking apart and fixing together. And, you know, the casts are not just as they come out. I do a lot of, manipulation. And it's a bit of a Frankenstein process, actually, to kind of create these new forms out of the casts and out of the vessels. And the vessels as well, I, you know, cut them in half, and I build different parts. You know, I'm doing a lot of changes to both the cast and the vessels. And then when I feel like they are in a composition that I feel happy with, and I've sanded and smoothed and, you know, turned it into something which feels like a whole object, then I paint the cast to mimic the patina of the vessel. And often the painting will go back onto the vessel and then onto the cast body part. So there's a kind of, yeah, back and forth mimicking of each other. And basically I build up the surface, which sort of becomes like a bit like a kind of impressionist painting. It's a really different process, actually, to the making of the sculpture. The painting is quite a kind of meditative, it's a process of copying, but then also of kind of, you know, composing, thinking about where lichen has grown naturally on the pot, and then maybe bringing that across onto the figures, and then, you know, bringing something that I've painted onto the figures back onto the pot. And I see it in kind of, yeah, I like to think of my sculptures as a sort of strange variant of polychrome sculpture, in which the material erosion becomes a kind of painting. Yeah,
I love that you explain that. Yeah, that's such an interesting process, and in so many ways the layers. So a work like Eternal Return, of course, yeah, outlines that well, because the vessel in there looks like the original drainage hole, if that's what it is still there, right? That's partly why we're recognizing aspects of things that had a utilitarian purpose before they were incorporated into a work like Eternal Return.
Yeah, with Eternal Return, that was actually, I think it's called a boudier. I'm going to say this wrong, but it was, I think it was like a wash tub, a French wash tub. It was actually more of a kind of bulbous shape. And I cut the whole vessel in half, which, you know, also feels there's a kind of destructiveness to it sometimes, because these objects are old and they do, you know, there's a beauty in the form that they've been made in. But I kind of have to go through this destruction to make something new, and there's also something kind of enjoyable about that sort of physical process of destroying, of of allowing myself to break something apart in the knowledge that I'm going to make something kind of new and hopefully as beautiful or different and beautiful out of it. But yeah, so it was a kind of wash tub. So it had that hole which had a cork in it as a plug. And you know, when I cut it in half, and I suddenly the interior is revealed, which had a completely different kind of patina to the outside, which had obviously been exposed to the air, but the inside maybe, you know, revealed something, the kind of calcification from water that it had been filled with again and again over time. Yeah, and that work is probably the biggest work that I've made. It was the biggest work of the show. It felt quite monumental, that work. And it was technically quite a feat because it was a heavy vessel at the center. So I had to create, you know, a kind of metal armature to hold the whole thing up, which then I clad with these bodies. And then I also cast hands and arms from quite a few different generations, which I merged together, which kind of circle the bowl. So there's this sense of kind of a real sense of like time looping around the outside of the bowl. Yeah, there's lots of different ages, aged hands within that work.
Yeah, that's so fascinating. I'm so happy that we talked about this show. And, of course, for listeners, there's links here to dive more into this work and see more images. I want to ask you one more question before we go a little off topic. What are you reading at the moment?
Sure, yeah. Well, I actually started rereading this book called Holes by Hilary White because I was kind of thinking, actually, that was a book that I was reading during the making of the show, and also I just wanted to reread it because kind of reminded of how good it was. But it's a very strange short novel which mixes fiction with nonfiction. Hilary White is a poet and academic, so she kind of takes that sort of form of it's sort of academic inquiry into the form of the whole. She explores the whole as a form, like from the black hole to the sinkhole to artists who have been obsessively drawn to holes, such as Lee Bontecue, Carolee Schneemann. She looks at holes, how they appear in film and in culture. But then alongside all that research, which is really fascinating, is then this kind of sort of strange love story or story of desire, of her own desire for someone who is just doesn't give her anything that she wants. And there's this sense of her own desire, you know, she's attracted to the sort of unknown, the whole in this person. And yet he will give her nothing back, you know. And I suppose that, you know, desire becomes a whole in a way that the narrator gets lost in. But then there's also like another strange aspect to it, that she, you know, around her in her apartment, holes start appearing, and this kind of hole opens up in her ceiling, which is almost like a kind of black hole, sort of metaphorical hole that follows her around, and she becomes very enamored with that hole. And in some ways, as she the desire for this other person is not met, she almost kind of turns her desire onto the hole that appears in her room. If that makes sense. It's a really interesting book. I guess it's I'm really drawn to it because I love thinking about holes. And actually, in terms of my work, I often think about the fact that the vessels are empty and that they're they kind of hold this void, and often it's really, oh, I love it when people look over the lip of the vessel and think there must be something in there, but there's not. And that the bodies are kind of lifting up these vessels, and inside there is nothing, and maybe what they're holding up is a kind of nothingness. And in the way that there's also, you know, my work also feels kind of ruined and broken, and, you know, there are kind of holes within the form of the work. It doesn't feel complete. I sort of feel like there's some kind of generative quality in that ruinedness, or that kind of openness, that it allows for imagination, or allows for, I don't know, I see them maybe as kind of portals or something, you know, that there's something open, held open for the viewer to get lost in.
Thanks so much for sharing that. That does sound fascinating. I want to thank you so much, Clementine, for talking with me today. And again, listeners, there's more links here to learn more. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thank you so much. It was really nice to speak.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.